Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Okay, so I'm doing a series of lectures on the four Bodhisattva vows. The first lecture was on the meaning of vow. The second lecture was on the beings are numberless. I vow to save them. And now we're going to talk about delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. So in Japanese, the word delusion is bonno, which means affliction, distress, passions, desires that cause suffering for self or other. So that may be a little different than how you thought about this. Bonno is a Japanese equivalent to the word in Sanskrit of klesha. So klesha refers to afflictions, distractions that disturb our ability to respond in an enlightened way. They disturb our ability to respond to situations that we encounter, people that we encounter, difficulties that we encounter, to be able to respond in a skillful way. They incite unwholesome deeds in body, speech, and mind. So now in some Buddhist schools and in the earliest Buddhist doctrine, in order to attain nirvana which was the goal of practice, our kleshas have to be eliminated in order to reach a situation in which we're not reborn in samsara. Now, if you eliminate all kleshas during your lifetime, then this is called nirvana with remainder. So this is a situation in which you are no longer creating klesha. You're no longer caught in your kleshas, no longer creating the kind of karmic problems that cause you to have rebirth. But you still have these karmic afflictions that have to be worked through. And then nirvana without remainder means that you have no more karmic hindrances to getting off the wheel of birth and death, and that you will die in a state called peri-nirvana, or no more rebirths. So that's what happened with Shakyamuni Buddha. When Shakyamuni Buddha died, he entered the state of parinirvana. Now, these kleshas are bonno, are greed, hate, and delusion. In Sanskrit, these are called moha. And usually these are kind of the three categories. Obviously, there are a lot more things that you can probably think of that we do that are unwholesome, unhelpful, unskillful. But generally, greed is a category of wanting to get more, like kind of like hungry ghosts who, as you may recall, have giant stomachs, little toothpick necks, and they just can never get enough down their throats. Hate is that state in which we push everything away. And delusion is a term, technical term, which means that we do not understand that we and all beings do not have an inherently existing self. We do have a self, but the self that we have is interconnected, interbeing with all of reality. So we and all beings are real things, but we are produced from something else, we are affected by causes and conditions, and we are not separate. So, as I said earlier, we can think of lots of other states in which we do things that are not particularly helpful, like we're lazy, sometimes we're caught in cynicism, we may lack empathy, we're arrogant, impatience, narcissist, etc. So, that's what delusions are when we're talking about delusions are inexhaustible. And then the part of the sentence I'll talk about, the inexhaustible later, the part of the sentence about ending them, we vow to cut off these poisonous mental states. Now, from a Western psychological point of view, and I think just from human nature, at least from my own experience, cutting off what we perceive as undesirable behavior is perhaps not a very good state. You know, I just realized that I am not in spotlight view, and I'm going to put myself in that view. So, here we go. So, from a psychological point of view, cutting off what we perceive as undesirable behavior doesn't perhaps work very well. Cutting off part of your personality will probably lead to resentment. It will lead to resistance and acting out. You know, when we try to just cut something off that we've decided is unwholesome in some behavior that we're engaged in, usually it brings up some part of ourselves in which we feel like we're being annihilated. That part of ourselves is a kind of coping mechanism that we've created over time. And so consequently, to just say, okay, I'm not going to do that thing anymore, I'm never going to get angry again, I'm never going to be impatient, I'm never going to be greedy, I'm never going to be this or that, usually doesn't work very well. So I would say that cutting off is not necessarily something that we want to do. And I think that Dogen agreed with this. He wrote in Kato, or the translation of that is Twining Vines, he wrote, although the sages, which we can also understand to be referring to arhats, who are advanced Theravadan, early Buddhist teaching, elder school of the elders, advanced practitioners. Although the sages all devise study that severs the root or cuts off the root source of twining vines, which are problems or discord, they do not study that this cutting off means to cut the twining vines with twining vines. In other words, they don't understand that in order to work with our kleshas, we have to go into and communicate, if you will, with those kleshas in order for us to make and bring about transformation. Now, in this case, in this quote, Dogen is specifically talking about the student-teacher relationship. And I'd say, in generally, this idea is applicable. But let's just look at the student-teacher relationship. If, when I was a student, since I wanted to be ordained, I must admit that I had some greed around that. So it meant that perhaps I wasn't always honest with my teacher about things that I didn't agree with. But ultimately, we have to be honest with our teacher. Ultimately, we have to bring forth the things that are difficult for us in that relationship. Because as we bring forth those issues that we have, those are the things that allow for transformation and growth. Those are the things that bring intimacy and dialogue. And so it is better to, in a skillful way, right, that's important, in a skillful way, that we actually talk to each other about what's going on in our heads. And so in this way, we don't cut off problems. We engage our problems, and we, through that engagement, we transform what is unworkable into what is workable. So if we experience a compulsive nature and we try to ignore or cut off our problem, then our minds will find a way to satisfy those cravings in some other way. If we acknowledge and work with our issues, then we may find a way to transform our difficulties into a harmonious partnership with those difficulties. The difficulties may not go away, but we become friends with them. They become workable, and they no longer function as a klesha. They are not bon no. So we are told that these delusions are inexhaustible, are without end. And as I think all of us can attest, there always seems to be more of it all the time. So I guess the question I have for you is it possible to be enlightened without these delusions or problems? So there is a famous koan called Baijan's Fox. And I'm going to give a short version story of the koan. So there's a fox disguised as a person. And there are great illustrations of this koan, where way in the back of the crowd during the lecture, you see a guy dressed in a kimono, and right on the bottom of the kimono is a little foxtail sticking out. So this old man, this fox disguised as an old man, he's going to the lecture of a well-known master named Baizhang. So one day after the lecture, the old man fox approaches Baizhang and tells him a very interesting story. He explains that he used to be a Zen master himself. And in that capacity, one day a student came up to him and he said, "Does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect or not?" So essentially, the student was asking, is an enlightened person exempt from creating karmic kleshas by their actions or not? This old fox, Ni Zen Master, responded no. And promptly he was reborn as a fox over and over again for 500 years. Okay, so now Baizhang, the Zen Master, with whom he's talking, says to him, "Well, why don't you ask me that question?" And so the old fox asks the question. And then Baizhang says, "You know, is an enlightened person affected by causes and conditions or not?" And Baizhang says, "Such a person does not ignore cause and effect. Such a person does not ignore cause and effect." So basically, Baizhang saying, being enlightened is very much about cause and effect. It is about paying attention to delusion. It's about paying attention to our own tendencies. He isn't saying pay attention to the doctrine of cause and effect, of causation. He's saying pay attention to your life. Pay attention to your life. Pay attention to your relationships. Pay attention to how skillful you are. Pay attention to the problems that we create. One of the mistakes the old fox man made when he was a Zen teacher was to assume that enlightenment was the activity of just one person, himself. In other words, he thought enlightenment was permanent and just the activity or achievement of himself as a particular person. So he didn't understand that enlightenment is an interactive experience. It's the experience of the moment. We have enlightened responses. We are not enlightened people. The second mistake he had was he thought that he could cut off all situations in which he might create or get caught by his kleshas because he was enlightened, and thus he had cut off any possibility, at least in his mind, of being caught once and for all by any problems that he might create. So he was exempt from responsibility, essentially, for any of the problems that he might have or any of the unacknowledged delusions that he might have. So he understood himself to be separate from life's interbeing or interaction. You know, in my own lifetime as a Zen student, I remember a story about a teacher, a Buddhist teacher, who believed that they were enlightened. And because they were enlightened, they had carte blanche to coerce their female students, it's a man, coerce their female students into sexual activities with them. And they believed, because they were enlightened, that they did not create any karmic repercussions from this, nor were they responsible for their actions. So that's a problem. That's a big problem. In the case of the old fox, who, by the way, his name was also Baizhang when he was a Zen master, but in case of the old man, we don't know what it was that he was doing or not doing. Maybe he wasn't doing anything. But what we see in this koan is that, not surprisingly, he got completely caught by the student's question and was exposed as a person who was unable to see the trap that he had set for himself. And in this way, he fell all the way to the bottom. If he had understood First of all, that realization is about interconnection and interbeing with all things that he's relating to, and that it isn't about one person's attainment. He would not have strayed so far away as to answer the student the way he did. And also, he did not know that delusions like Dharma gates are endless. Because if we're interacting with the world, with our world, then we're often presented with situations that push our buttons. And that we may become caught by these delusions that we have. Therefore, this opportunity, if you will, these delusions that may arise are endless. Or we could say the opportunities for delusion or unskillful response are endless, as are the opportunities for the skillful response are endless. So the fact that they're endless doesn't mean that we can't wake up. It means that this world is one big cause and effect that is us and all beings together making the world. And in the case of Kato, where Dogen's talking about twining vines, that making the world, these human relationships that we engage in, coupled with our own karmic issues, neuroses, past, however we want to characterize the things that we that compel us to be unskillful, all of these things together are part of this world that we live in. And if we ignore that fact, you know something? We're toast. We're toast. So, what we want to do is investigate who we are, is to wake up to who we are, and to be aware of our relationships in the world, and to try to become more skillful, and not get caught in the myriad delusions. Suzuki Roshi said in his commentary on the Genjo Koan, when he said was talking about enlightenment, he said, you know, if you have a problem with sake, drinking sake, you're going to have that same problem after you're enlightened. But the difference is going to be that your relationship is going to be different to that problem. So, it's pretty clear that as human beings, we are susceptible to our kleshas. Now, bodhisattvas, high-level bodhisattvas, are caught in the endless round of rebirth by their karmic attachment to helping and benefiting all beings, which is what causes them to be reborn over and over again. So, in our school, these very bono, our delusions, are the bread and butter of the bodhisattva, the reason for their existence. The saha world, or in Sanskrit, the saha loka world, the saha loka world, not, oh, my hand just disappeared. That's very, this is the world of endurance. This is the saha world. We endure this suffering of being a human being. This is a world that we often perceive as problematic, and yet it's said that when we are caught in delusion, we see the world as samsara, but upon awakening, we see that the world is actually the pure Buddha field of Shakyamuni Buddha. The world has not changed. The Buddha field has not changed. Our view of the Buddha field has changed. Our view of our life, our view of our suffering has changed. So that, I would say, is a big part of the kind of practice that we're engaged in. As our view of the world has changed, we become more flexible, we become more open. While we suffer, we don't probably ever escape necessarily the suffering of the body, for example, but it is transformed in our understanding of that. It doesn't mean that we will never grieve. It doesn't mean that we will never get caught in our kleshas. It doesn't mean that we will never feel desire. But it does mean that when these things are unwholesome, when these, and I'm not saying that they are unwholesome in and of themselves, I'm saying that when our relationship to them becomes unwholesome, that we are able to engage in a kind of transformation of that suffering that without this investigation, we would not be able to do. In the case of the high-level bodhisattva, they are completely in this samsaric world, but they are not of the samsaric world because they are not caught by this delusion and suffering. Dogen wrote in Busho, Chobogenzo Busho, which means Buddha nature, he said, even though our deluded consciousness may change by eradicating delusion, even though our deluded consciousness may transform by being the eradicated or that which is transformed, this does not necessarily have anything to do with the traces of coming and going or the ordinary ups and downs of our life. Somebody read that again. Even though our deluded consciousness may change by eradicating delusion, even though our deluded consciousness may transform by being the eradicated or that which is transformed, this does not necessarily have anything to do with the traces of coming and going or the ordinary ups and downs of life in samsara. So Dogen's saying, even if you do wake up and attain realization, you will still be subject to the ups and downs of this samsaric life. You will still be engaged with the dharma of cause and effect. What he does not say here is that your response will be more beneficial to self and others, and your suffering will be different. So, from this standpoint, we are accepting our world as problematic. We are accepting that delusions exist and saying, I won't step away. I won't hide from this. We vow to do our best to meet each delusion as best we can and not be overwhelmed by it, to maintain our equanimity in the face of that. Even in the times when we do not maintain equanimity, we still maintain equanimity in the face of our lack of equanimity. Our delusions will always be with us in some form or another, but we can avoid being pushed around by them. We ask ourselves, can we be skillful enough not to cause suffering to ourselves and to others? So what does Dogen say about delusion and realization? He wrote in Genjo Koan, those who are greatly awakened to delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about awakening are living beings. Those who are greatly awakened to delusion are Buddhas, and those who are greatly deluded about awakening are living beings. Well, we are Buddha nature, so it means that our essential nature is this nature of a Buddha. So we are both the Buddha referred to here and the living being simultaneously. So when we are greatly awakened to our delusion, and those kleshas do not get in the way of realized response, we are engaged in enlightened interaction relationship at that moment. But when we are greatly deluded about our delusion, or we're greatly deluded about awakening, we are in that space of deluded human beings, foolish human beings. So to acknowledge that delusions are inexhaustible is the work of awakening to delusion and revealing our Buddha nature. Forgetting and falling into delusion is also being human. We are both sometimes awake, sometimes in delusion. We are twining vines of complications and transformation. I vow to end them is our life's work. We vow to wake up to the best of our ability. This is noble work, it is brave work, and it is necessary work that we all do together. Thank you.